Welcome to EDUCAUSE Now. I'm Jerry Bain. On this edition of EDUCAUSE Now, we give you some pointers on how to facilitate a successful web event on your campus. Our annual conference is coming up October 12th through the 15th in Anaheim, California, and EDUCAUSE IT Director Becky Granger gives us some insight on how IT makes the EDUCAUSE annual conference run smoother for attendees. And we feature an interview with the Director of Strategy for the University of British Columbia, Jens Hauser, about the complexities and strategies for identity and access management in higher education. If you'd like to find out more about the interviews and stories you hear on the podcast, visit our show notes at www.educause.edu/now. And if you'd like to listen to the podcast directly from your mobile device, you can visit educause.edu/mobile. EDUCAUSE is releasing a podcast to help you facilitate a web event on your campus. If you'd like your colleagues to attend a web presentation, this is a guide on how to create an effective environment, keep the conversation flowing, and make the meeting more than just a meeting, but a productive time that ripples into action. If you'd like to hear the full podcast, it'll be published on our website at www.educause.edu/podcast. But here's a preview. Having a successful webinar on your campus, that is, having your faculty or staff attend a web event together, takes more than just turning on the overhead screen and establishing the connection. To facilitate a web event takes planning and some social skills to gather and keep attendees interested. We spoke with several veteran facilitators to find the strategies that will help make your event successful and productive. One of the first steps is preparation. What can you do ahead of time to familiarize yourself with the subject matter? Mark Askren is CIO at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. He uses multiple sources to make sure he knows the subject and his audience.
What I've gone to is I've looked at EDUCAUSE listserv conversations, community conversations about perhaps what are the questions people are grappling with, trying to get a sense of what's going on. I've asked others, peers, if they're aware of sort of what are the hot topics about it.
I think that in order to prepare as a facilitator, the main thing is to know your audience.
Pablo Molina is CIO at Georgetown University.
The facilitator must also state what the purpose of the program is, what the expectations of the program are. It helps to have audience members introduce themselves and indicate what they expect to get out of the program.
So now you're ready for the event.
Setting the tone has such an impact on how the rest of the presentation goes.
Tracy Matrano, Director of IT Policy at Cornell.
What you want to do is set whatever kind of tone the presentation is going to have, and you want to greet people warmly. You want to let them know that you're there.
Food brings people together, unless you're a vegetarian, and also that humor works very well to break the ice.
Try to get started on time, 2, 3, 5 minutes at most, kicking off the session, talking perhaps about some of the big issues that are out there.
So once the program has started and it's time to interact with your attendees, how do you get the conversation to start flowing?
Ask questions. That's the number one way to get it going. Start asking some questions.
For example, if the discussion is around iPads or iPods, one may ask who in the audience uses them for teaching or for research, why, and what are their experiences? If not, why not?
It's not just a matter of kicking it off, but it really is a matter of trying to get those interesting questions in there. Why not be provocative? Why not ask questions that are important, maybe even a little bit uncomfortable in terms of the status quo? And I think that at least spending a little time going there, people will remember that. I think they'll think about that, and it will be more than just another committee meeting.
I ask myself, what still doesn't seem clear about this? You know, this person knows everything about it, but the way they've said it, it is still not connecting to how I use a computer. And then I try to ask a question around that.
Online feedback, for example, running a Twitter channel or a chat session may encourage valuable participation from attendees who do not feel comfortable voicing their comments.
Now everyone's talking around the topic, but there are some pitfalls to watch out for.
If the group is large and everybody sort of goes one at a time around the circle, the time's sort of up at that stage and you haven't really gotten into an exchange.
You never want to embarrass a speaker. You absolutely never want to embarrass a participant. I would avoid, like the plague, one-upmanship and showmanship.
Now it's time to wrap up the event, but you want to leave your audience with something more than just an hour of conversation.
the biggest value may not even be the conversation, but it may be that they'll meet two or three people that are dealing with the exact same issue, and they'll have a connection.
It is important to ask to what extent the session met the expectations of attendees, either in person at the end of the session or after the program with the survey. Facilitators may also point out any resources available to audience members to learn more or to continue the conversation.
So good luck with facilitating your own event and enriching the dialogue between the professionals on your campus. Mark Askren, Diane Graves, Pablo Molina, and Tracy Matrano.
This year, our focus for the website is on wayfinding. How do you find your way around the conference from a bunch of different perspectives?
That's Becky Granger, EDUCAUSE Director of Information Technology, talking about the role of our IT department at the EDUCAUSE Annual Conference. The EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference takes place in Anaheim, California, October 12th through the 15th.
So we've enhanced the ability to find the sessions that you're interested in. We have some new searching and sorting information on the website. We have a new exhibit hall guide to help you find the exhibitors you're interested in. We also have a new affinity finder. We know you come to the conference to talk to each other, so you need to find those folks. So we have some new faceting information about finding people you'd be interested in talking to. And then finding your way around the center, we have some new mapping technology to help you physically find the rooms you're looking for. From the on-site technology perspective, you can imagine there's a lot that goes into that. And so it starts from the very ground up, literally getting the bandwidth to the convention center. So we usually work with a local university and we bring in a whole bunch of bandwidth. Last year, we brought in 350 megs. This year, we're bringing in an entire gig of bandwidth. Okay, so if you just to put this in perspective, a typical office has a T1, which is 1.5 megs. So we brought in 350 last year, and we're bringing in a whole gig this year. We have a backbone network that we build in the facility, and last year we deployed 104 devices, routers and switches, throughout the building over six VLANs to get the network to actually work throughout the entire center. And that doesn't count the wireless. That was a whole nother setup. We work with cell phone providers to beef up coverage so that they know there's going to be 6,000 people in the area and that they need to make sure they can handle it. And then we do lots of stuff just throughout the event, programming EDUCAUSE Central and registration, the email kiosks, wiring the exhibit hall, supporting all the exhibitors. All of that is what goes into the on-site technology.
The EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference, where the best thinking in higher education IT come together October 12th through the 15th in Anaheim, California. Find out more and register at www.educause.edu/E2010. See you there. Jens Hauser is the Director for Strategy at the University of British Columbia. He sat down for an interview with Carol Hall, who's CIO for Eastern Iowa Community College District, to share his thoughts on identity and access management in higher ed.
Thanks for joining us today, Jens.
Well, thank you so much for having me today.
What do you think the challenges are in implementing identity and access management in higher education?
At UBC, we've been engaged, as many institutions have, for many years on identity management efforts. And in the past, we really started with a if-we-build-it-they-will-come model, where central IT delivered some identity management capabilities, and we kind of hoped that other folks at the university would use them. And we've been, to a great degree, successful. We have over 140 applications, for example, that leverage our central single sign-on framework. But we really haven't had the impact across the institution that we'd like to. So we did a reboot on our institutional identity management efforts, and we launched an identity management program that, while it was steered by the IT department, was really saying that identity and access management is not an IT problem, it's an institutional problem. It's an institutional challenge of how do we deal with the people that come to us? How do we track the relationships of individuals when they're at our universities? And at universities, we have such a diverse range of relationships that we need very capable systems that can allow folks to start and come maybe to a course, an open lecture, then maybe they become a student later on, then they transition to being a research assistant while they're a student, then they might be a professor, they're an alumni, they're all of these different things at the same time, which is a characteristic of identity management systems that really is shared almost nowhere else outside of our sector. And so by recasting identity management, not as a technology problem, but as how do we as an institution deal with the relationships and track the relationships of individuals who engage with us, by bringing in a steering committee that was not IT heavy, but heavy with owners of processes, business owners at the institution, we think we're going to achieve a much higher rate of success. We also tend to have a challenge of complexity. As I said, we tend to have folks who occupy a bunch of different spaces at our institution at once. So we need systems that are able to track that. And unfortunately, because of this, we tend to look to the commercial sector to provide these kind of solutions. There just isn't off-the-shelf software you can buy and slam in, and it meets your identity management needs. You really have to make sure you're tailoring a solution that meets your individual institution's need, your business processes and practices. Cost and funding tends to be the last of the big challenges. Paying for a commercial system that has 500,000 accounts, that's challenging. Likewise, getting the time of the individuals that need to be working on this, getting time of individuals from the registrar's office and from the HR sector and from IT and from each of the departments is a significant challenge.
What do you believe this next step should be to advance federated identity management for the higher education community?
So federated identity management tends to be seen as a next step. Once you've gotten your internal house in order, then you can start looking at federating. But I think more and more folks are saying that they can actually see some early federation, that rather than having to wait for everything to be fully solved inside their institution, they can actually look to federation as an early target for improving their identity and access measurement capabilities. There have always been a set of early adopters who will go out there and who have been trying out federation. But there's this huge mass of institutions, particularly in the U.S., who have said, I'm not quite sure what this federation thing is or how it would be useful to it. And I think by having EDUCAUSE's voice behind that and saying, look, federation is not just a good thing, but it's a key step in moving your campus forward, that will be very helpful. Federations tend to be bounded by legal political domains, bound by where there's privacy legislation, those kind of things. In a number of the countries, in the Uncommon Federation in the United States and the Canadian Access Federation in Canada, we're engaged in conducting future studies that say, where do we need to move our federations? Where do we need to go next? I think there's some very interesting work that's come out of those and some very interesting business models, in fact, that are emerging out of those future studies.
Well, it's been great talking to you today, Fenz. Is there anything that you'd like to add to the conversation before we part?
I think if there's just one recurring theme in all of the things that excite me, that engage me, that I've been looking at over the years, it's really that theme of collaboration. As individual institutions, we rarely have the resources that we need. In fact, it's almost never that we have all of the resources that we need to meet the teaching, the learning, the research, and the community service mandates that we have as institutions. And I think the thing that differentiates us as a higher education sector is our ability to collaborate and our ability to cooperate. And I think if you look across all of these technology areas, if you look across all of these research areas, that's the one driving theme that I think is moving us forward.
Jens Hauser, Director of Strategy for the University of British Columbia. That's it for this edition of EDUCAUSE Now. You can find our podcasts on your mobile device by visiting www.educause.edu/mobile. Of course, you can also find our podcast on iTunes and at our podcast page at educause.edu/podcasts. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.